Hi, my name is Scott Taransky. I'm married to Carrie, and we have 5 children, 2 of whom are married now. And we have grandchildren we're helping to grow as well.
I'm Joanne Miller, and I'm married to Ed. Ed and I have 2 sons who are grown and in their 20s. These guys have been a delight to raise, and now we have a new adventure of parenting young men. We represent the National Center for Biblical Parenting, and we love helping parents using biblical, practical principles.
We know that the family has many faces today. Single parents, blended families, adoptive families, grandparents raising children, in addition to traditional families. But there are some principles that are important for all families because children need guidance and help.
All children need to learn to be internally motivated. The internally motivated child sees what needs to be done and does it. This child takes initiative to do what's right and wants to resolve wrongs. Some would call it responsibility. The reality is that many adults lack this level of maturity.
If you want children to be internally motivated, you have to parent in a way that teaches that. Many parents use rewards or threats to get their kids to do what they want. An overemphasis on these kinds of external motivations builds a dependency on parents.
God designed your child with the necessary equipment to be internally motivated. Your job is to help your kids develop a sensitivity and respond appropriately to those internal prompters.
Let's go to this first session as we introduce one of the most significant areas we can work on in parenting. We want to take you through a Bible study because the Bible is very practical and relevant for our lives. We also want to take you on a theological adventure because as we study our Christian theology, we see that it has a lot of depth to it. We want to take one idea, one theological concept, one biblical idea, and we want to expand it, we want to develop it, and we want to help it to grow inside of your hearts. And as we do, we're going to come up with 21 different parenting strategies because the Bible and theology are very relevant to our lives. So as we continue to develop this material, you're going to say, wow, that's interesting at first. But as we continue on, you might say, I wonder if this will work in my family. As we continue some more, you might say, well, I think this might work. I'm going to try some of these things. We'll continue to teach, and typically what you'll say is, boy, this is significant. I need this in my home. And by the time we're done, you're going to say, this is going to change the way I think about parenting. I believe that we need a revolution in parenting today.
The concept that we want to share with you is the biblical concept of the conscience. We've done a lot of study on the conscience, and we've come to understand that it's just crucial for our parenting. If as parents we could understand what the conscience is, how God intended the conscience to help us as individuals, it's going to help us as we parent our children, helping our children to become more internally motivated rather than just being motivated by externals.
Try this experiment with your kids. Ask them this question, why do you do what's right? Invariably, children will say, so I don't get in trouble. That's when you take them to Romans chapter 13, verse 5, which says, submit to authority not only for possible punishment, but also for the sake of conscience. Punishment, external. Conscience, internal. See, when you focus on the conscience, good things happen and children develop an internal motivation.
I think many of our children are externally motivated because that's the way we're raising them. We have this tendency toward behavior modification. Many of us were raised with behavior modification. We read about all kinds of behavior modification techniques, and they're somewhat logical. Behavior modification says if you do your homework, you can go out to play. If you clean your room, you can watch a video. But what we're really saying to our children is if you do what I say, you can have what you want. And inadvertently, I think what we're doing is we're encouraging this selfishness in a child's heart because children just have to jump through a couple hoops to get something for themselves. What we really want for our children is to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, to have an internal motivation to do it because it's right, not just because I'm going to get some kind of reward out of the whole process.
We're not saying that behavior modification is wrong. We just believe it's incomplete. It doesn't completely work with the way that God created children, God created adults. Change doesn't take place with simple behavior modification. The problem is, if you're only using behavior modification with your children, things will look good on the outside, but on the inside may get more and more difficult inside the child's heart. Eventually, you're going to have a problem. It's not significant enough to work with behavior modification today. We've got to go deeper with our children.
I mean, wouldn't you like your children to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do? Imagine your son walking into the kitchen, seeing that the trash is overflowing, and just taking it out without needing mom or dad to tell him to do it. Boy, that may seem unrealistic, but that's our goal for our kids, isn't it? To be able to see what needs to be done, to consider, oh, I guess I should start my homework because I have all these things to do. We want our children to be mature and responsible, but we've got to ask the question, how are we going to get there if all we're doing now is moving them along to get some kind of reward? We want to teach them to be internally motivated so they'll be doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
What does it mean to be internally motivated for a child? Many of our children are externally motivated. They're waiting for parents to be the prompters in life. So the parent says, Billy, get your backpack by the door. Billy, is your homework in the backpack? Billy, make sure your hair is combed. Billy, the bus is coming in 5 minutes. You need to get out there. So children develop this inward reliance on parents as their conscience, that parents are the ones who are prompting the children to get through what needs to happen. Often parents then resort to nagging in the midst of their prompting. And the frustration of family life increases. There is a different way to parent. What we want to do is recognize that children are motivated on the inside. We want to help children to develop some of those abilities to work with some of the stuff going on inside. We believe there's a way to parent that gets in touch with those things and helps our children to be inner motivated.
And children do have inner motivations. They do things from internal stuff, but usually those are emotions, and sometimes that takes them in the wrong direction.
Let's say your son gets angry with his sister because she rips the CD out of his hand. Well, he's internally motivated to hit her, right? That's an internal motivation based on emotion. The emotion is dragging him along. Now, those kind of internal motivations happen in the heart. In fact, all the internal motivations we have happen inside of the heart. Emotion is one of those. So when a child acts out emotionally, they're being internally motivated. If a child steals some candy and goes and hides it, that child is being internally motivated by desire. We call it temptation when it's negative. So here's a child who's internally motivated to do the wrong thing, and that is steal some candy. Those are internal motivations that are going on inside the heart of a child.
God has placed many things inside of the heart of a child. Emotions are one of them, motivations are one of them. But there are two governors inside the heart that we need to be aware of, because as parents then, we can take advantage of them. Those two governors are the Holy Spirit and the conscience. It's very important for us as parents to understand that, because we want to take advantage of the work of the Holy Spirit. We want to take advantage of the conscience in a child's heart, because that's going to help them then make choices as they get older.
Oh, maybe you're saying, but my child isn't a Christian yet. The Holy Spirit isn't influencing him yet. Ah, but let's go to John chapter 16. Because Jesus said to his disciples, I'm going away, and when I go away, I will send the Comforter to you. He will convict he will convict the world of guilt in regards to sin, righteousness, and judgment. So even if a child is not yet a believer, that child is still influenced by the Holy Spirit. The things that we're going to say will provide some training for children and even prepare them for God to work more significantly in their lives.
So then we have to ask the question, how does this affect us as parents? Is there a way to parent our child that takes advantage of what's already going on in a child's heart? What God has already placed in that child's heart? And of course, we think there is. And so we need to understand what the Holy Spirit's doing, and we need to understand what the conscience is and how it works. And I think often as parents, we don't really understand the conscience. We don't know what to do with that. So we want to unpack that a little bit and understand what is the conscience and how does that affect our parenting.
Now, I'm going to be sharing with you several Bible verses in the course of our time together. If you're not familiar with the Bible, I would encourage you to get one, because it's a very helpful book. It'll help you understand yourself better. It'll help you understand your relationship with God better, and it'll give you very practical ideas for working with your life, including your children. If you are already a Christian, if you are already committed to the Bible, this is going to be very helpful for you, because we are going to embed the parenting principles that we share with you into your faith. You're going to see relevant, practical scriptures that will help you as you work with your children. The word conscience is not just a psychological term we're borrowing from psychology textbooks. It comes from the Bible. 30 times in the New Testament the word conscience is used. 20 of those times by the Apostle Paul in his writings. Now of those 20, five times he uses the word conscience are spoken to Timothy. You remember young Timothy? He was a pastor. Paul wrote some letters to him to help him understand how to run God's family, the church. Five times he tells Timothy about the importance of the conscience in those writings. The Apostle Peter, he includes the word conscience three times in his writing. In his short books, he emphasizes the conscience three times because it's important and he wants to share it with them. The writer to the Hebrews shares the word conscience four times in his writing. It's an important concept. It's all throughout the Bible we see this concept of the conscience, and it has a lot of practical ramifications for us. Not only biblical ramifications, but it comes really from our basic theology. So I'm going to share with you several theologies that we have and show you how the conscience relates to each one of those.
As we've studied the scriptures and we've looked at each one of those verses about the conscience, we've identified four areas where the conscience works. Four areas in a child's life where the conscience is prompting that child. We want to understand those four areas because as parents we want to take advantage of them. The first one is to do what's right. The second is to deal with wrongs. The third is to be honest. And the fourth is to care about others. Four areas of the conscience all at work within a child that we want to understand and really be able to utilize as the child is growing.
In just a moment, we're going to share with you how we get those four areas of the conscience, where they come actually out of the Bible. But before we do, we want to introduce you to a young lady. Her name is Chrissy. She's 16 years old and becoming more aware of some of the things going on inside of her heart.
My father, I can't believe him. How could he do this to me? The paper is due tomorrow, and now it's gone. It's completely gone. It's up in flames. I can't believe he could do this. He doesn't care about anybody but himself. He is a colossal ignoramus.
Mighty big words for such a young lady, and not exactly true.
What? Who was that?
I'm your conscience. And don't you think you're overreacting a bit?
No, I'm not overreacting. Last week he moved my iPod and I couldn't find it.
He did tell you to put your things away.
And I was going to get to it. But who did you say you are? And why are you talking to me? And why am I talking back?
I am your conscience. And that's what I do. I communicate with you. You just haven't learned to listen yet.
Oh, I listen. You're just new. What, did you come along with one of my school assignments or something?
I've been growing inside you since you were born. I'm not a mere fringe benefit of your math homework or your English assignment.
Fringe benefit? Who's the big word user now? You sound like my father.
Oh, yes. Sometimes like your father, and sometimes like your mother, and sometimes like your teachers, and sometimes like your friends, and sometimes even like yourself.
Like myself? What is the point of that? Oh, this is crazy. Well, that's it. I've officially gone crazy. My dad said that I was going to drive him crazy, but I beat him to it. He drove me crazy first. I just can't believe this. I'm just crazy. That's all. I've just gone crazy. That's all.
Are you finished yet?
I suppose.
You haven't gone crazy. You just have a vivid imagination.
So my conscience is like my imagination?
Well, not exactly. Your imagination is the collective interactions of your thoughts and ideas and feelings and experiences. Your conscience is more basic, more foundational, more grounded. Your imagination gets you in touch with possibilities so that you can figuratively fly. Your conscience keeps your feet planted on the ground and pointed in the right direction.
So my conscience and my imagination are like mental opposites, like the plus and minus signs of a magnet.
Oh, so you were listening in science class today, huh?
Just because I doodled doesn't mean I wasn't listening.
Well, look, your conscience and your imagination are not mental opposites. They're two ingredients in the same pie, which is you.
So my conscience just tells me right from wrong.
Well, it does tell you what's right, and it also reminds you about what's wrong, but it also helps you to be honest and also care about others.
You know, you talk a lot.
I have a lot of good things to say.
Like what else?
Like what you should do and when.
Being responsible.
Yes, and completing the things that you said you were going to do.
Keeping my promises.
Yes, and being kind.
Like to my brother and those nerds at school.
And not calling somebody a name.
Oh, sorry.
Like colossal ignoramus.
Like my dad?
Yes, like your dad.
Well, he is a colossal ignoramus.
He made a mistake. Did you have to yell at him like that?
Well, I was mad.
Well, that's why you should apologize.
No, I am not going to apologize.
Oh, like ranting and raving and pouting are great signs of maturity.
I was mad. And when I'm mad, I show it.
It's not wrong to show your emotions carefully, but it sounds like your father isn't the only one at fault here.
Well, I guess I should have put my paper away.
Yes, and you shouldn't have yelled at him either.
I was shocked. It was an instant reaction.
That's why you should apologize.
You know, it's not that big a deal. You're probably right. I just won't do it again.
Look, your father's out there now. He's sad. He's probably has his feelings hurt. You should just go out there and talk to him.
No, he's probably forgotten all about it.
Chrissy, you should do it because it's the right thing to do.
But I have all this homework to do. I'll apologize later.
If you go out there, you'll feel much better.
Would you quit bothering me?
I'm not bothering you. You're bothering you, remember? I am you.
Great. Well, I will go out and apologize then, and then I'll come back and do my homework. And I suppose you'll be here when I get back?
What do you mean? I'm going with you.
Oh, great. Could you at least let me do the talking?
I always do.
Here's one of the really fun things now, is that just about any problem in family life falls into one of these areas of the conscience. No matter what you're working on with your kids, there's a part of the conscience that helps with that. So as we start to develop the conscience and help children become more sensitive to their conscience, we'll be solving a lot of problems in family life.
The conscience is a powerful tool. We want to help you understand how we found each one of those pieces of the conscience from the scriptures. So let's look at the first one, doing what's right. We came across the verse in Acts chapter 23, verse 1, which says, Paul is speaking to the Sanhedrin in that verse, and he says, I have fulfilled my duty to God in all good conscience to this day. Do you see what Paul's saying there? He's tying the word conscience to fulfilling his duty, that is, doing the right thing. Those two are linked together. Part of the conscience is addressing doing the right thing in our lives.
Sometimes children struggle with this area of the conscience. They're not very good at doing what's right. They resist instructions. They need bribes or threats to get anything done. They do incomplete jobs. They really struggle with this area.
Some of these children have a hard time with peer pressure, doing the right thing in the midst of the pressure of other friends that are around. Others of these children who have a weakness in this part of the conscience have a hard time following through when things get tough or are distracted easily. This part of the conscience is going to help them greatly as they move forward.
They give up easily when the job gets too tough or boring. They need a parent standing over them, prodding them along, nagging them, otherwise they don't finish the job.
Now let's talk about this particular area of the conscience in very practical terms. In fact, let's give you an example of how you might use a conscience-based approach in your parenting. One family came to us. They said, our 7-year-old boy leaves his pajamas on the floor in the bathroom. Now if we ask him to get his pajamas out of there, he'll go ahead and take them out. But we wish he would see them without us having to tell him to do it. So we decided we would use a conscience-based approach with this particular child. We encouraged mom to create a little sign that went by the light switch that read, is this bathroom ready for the next person? Well, mom sat down with her son and said, you know, we never know who's going to visit our home. Maybe the queen will come and visit someday. We don't know. And if she wants to go to the bathroom and she goes in there and your pajamas are on the floor, we'll be really embarrassed. So we're going to put this sign here by the light switch that says, is this bathroom ready for the next person? Now, you have to understand, that's still an external, isn't it? Parents prompting is an external, but we're still using an external little sign by the light switch. But here's what happened for the child. The child, seeing the sign, not only picked up his pajamas, but he also cleaned off the counter, shut the cabinets, and flushed the toilet. Mom was pleased. Now she's seeing some internal motivation on the part of her son. That's what we're trying to develop as we're working on the conscience in kids.
Second part of the conscience is to deal with wrongs. Children make mistakes. Sometimes children intentionally do the wrong thing. We have to help them know how to respond to that. How can they deal with offenses in life as a child, even as they get older? Can they respond to that part of the conscience, to deal with wrongs?
Let me tell you how we get this part of the conscience from the scriptures. In 1 Samuel 25, we have the story of David. In this case, though, David was very angry. He had been mistreated by Nabal and his men. So David came back to his men and said, guys, get your swords on. We're going to kill everybody in Nabal's camp by the time we're done with the evening. So David's heading off to do this terrible deed.
And the heroine in the story is Abigail. Abigail is Nabal's wife. The Bible tells us that Abigail gathered some food together, came in the ravine right where David would be passing. She bowed down there in the ravine, and when David came along, she said these words to him, "David, God has prepared a great dynasty for you. You don't want to do anything wrong. You don't want to have on your conscience needless bloodshed, so don't do this thing you've planned." Now, do you see what she's done? She tied the word conscience there with doing the wrong thing. The conscience prompts us to deal with wrongs in our lives.
And of course, we have to help children know how to deal with wrongs when they've committed an offense. Some children have a hard time with this. Some children get angry when we correct them. Some children try and avoid taking responsibility, and they blame the problem, they rationalize, they make excuses for themselves because they don't want to take responsibility.
These kind of children have a hard time dealing with a wrong without a parent trying to work that through with them. You need to go and apologize to your friend. These children are not internally motivated when it comes to this particular area. Let me tell you about Mark. Because Mark came to Mom and said, "Mom, I broke it." Mom said, "You broke what?" "I broke the clown in the living room." "Well, let's go look. What happened?" So Mom and Mark went into the living room. Sure enough, the clown, the decorative clown, was broken, laying on the shelf in the living room. "What happened?" Mom said. "Well, I was playing with the ball in here, and when it came over and knocked the clown, and it broke." Now, Mom had been working with her son to try to help her son to be able to deal with wrongs. It was more typical for him to not confess to something, or to blame it on someone else, or to resist correction. He had a hard time with this area of wrong. So she was helping him to understand this from a conscience approach. So yes, she lost her clown, and Mark eventually had to do restitution for that. But at the moment, she focused on the conscience. And she said to her son, after some dialogue, she says, "You know, this is really different than what you used to do. You used to just cover it up or blame it on somebody else. What is your secret to success?" Now, I would encourage you to use that question with children on a regular basis. Because when children do the right thing, you want to say to them, "What's your secret to success?" Have them articulate what they did in the right way. And Mark said these words, "I just wanted to get rid of it," referring to, "I wanted to tell you about it so I don't have to have it on my conscience." You see, here's a guy who's having his conscience becoming more sensitive in his life. He just wanted to get rid of the offense. So that's why he came and talked to Mom. We're talking about helping children on a deeper level in working with them on the conscience.
This concept of the conscience is new for some parents. Take a moment and answer this question before we continue. What are you hearing so far about the conscience that you're finding helpful?